96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Looking for a new police chief. Metro Surge, Death with Dignity, and more. We're talking all things D.C. tonight with D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. That's 202-319-7810. If you have a question for the D.C. Council Chair or a comment, certainly you can comment on my Facebook page at facebook.com/HaroldFisherWHUR or follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or at DailyDrumWHUR. Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for coming in. And
my pleasure. Good evening.
Let's talk about today's vote today on the Death with Dignity bill. It passed 11-2. There's another vote coming up in 2 weeks. Talk to me about your feelings about this.
I view the legislation as being about choice. That is an individual who's at the end stage of his or her life having the choice whether they want to continue with misery or whether they want to end their life on their own terms. It has to be extraordinary circumstance. It has to be at end stage. It has to be a terminal condition. So it's a rare circumstance. But I think it's up to the individual, and it's not for the government to say you can or can't do that. It's your choice.
What do you say to people who, as we saw today in the council hearing, that they say no D.C. suicide, that they don't believe that this is the right thing for the District of Columbia?
Well, I don't think it's about the District of Columbia. It's about an individual. And I think they're taking away somebody's choice. My father passed away a year ago, and he died in November, and the last 10 months of his life were pretty miserable. It wasn't a circumstance where I asked him if he wanted to take away his life, and he didn't volunteer for that, but it was pretty miserable. And he was old. Mm-hmm. He was dying of old age. But there are folks who are, in fact, when you look at other states that have similar legislation, the typical circumstance is somebody who has cancer and are in terminal phase. And again, it's a personal choice. And what you would have, people who are opposed to this are saying, no, the government should say you don't get that choice.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson. How does this bill work, or if it indeed becomes law, how would it work? What are the circumstances under which someone would move through this process?
Well, there have to be certain, I'll say, preconditions. It's what I said before. If I remember correctly, it's something like 6 months. The prognosis is 6 months or less to live. And there has to be a knowledgeable medical professional. And there are certain safeguards in place to try to protect against coercion, which I don't think would be an issue anyway.
And why do you say that?
Because the circumstance, the preconditions, if you will, are such that you really, I mean, you're talking about a situation that commands compassionate care. Can you take me literally that nobody would ever try to abuse somebody? Well, the record with similar legislation in other states is that there hasn't been the fraud. But I suppose theoretically it's possible that somebody could say, I don't want to wait 2 months for you to die. I want you to die now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to force you to do it. But there are safeguards in place to protect against that. There just are. And in the other states, there just hasn't been. I mean, there aren't that many instances when it occurs. What I'm told is that I think in Oregon, something like a third of the people who actually requested the prescription for the medicines never ended up using them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the few of the fewest end up taking this course?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, sitting down with D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson about all things D.C. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call. We are taking your calls as they come in. I want to move to another issue, obviously a very big issue. Longtime police chief Kathy Lanier, now gone on to private industry. Peter Newsom is the acting chief. What is your position on the search for a new chief?
Well, I've talked with the mayor about this, and my understanding is that I think she had said there would either be a nomination this month or in January, and my sense of it is it'll be after the inauguration because there's too much. It's too complicated dealing with all the public safety concerns between now and the inauguration. I think that Pete Newsom has an excellent record. I think he's well-regarded in the community. He clearly knows the Metropolitan Police Department. He's been in the department for something close to 30 years. And so I think he's a fine choice to be the permanent chief. There is a search. I do not know the details of the search because the mayor has kept that within the executive. And I think that the district is in good hands, so it's not something we have to be worried about. My sense from the rank and file is that they're comfortable with the current situation. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to have a permanent chief, and we'll see what the mayor does. I think that there are advantages. There are always advantages to hiring from within. Of course, it gives those, the rank and file, always the sense that, you know, you can be promoted up to the top. And hiring from within means you're not bringing in a stranger. You're not radically changing things. We've benefited tremendously, I think, beyond what most people think about with having the same chief of police for almost a decade. That's incredible stability. And you get that as well by hiring from within.
It's rare, certainly, when you're talking about big cities to have someone stay in that position for so long.
Yes, yes. Kathy Lanier for almost 10 years. And Chief Lanier left the department with a good bench, as I call it, a good bench. A number of assistant chiefs and commanders who are good, very good managers and understand law enforcement and understand the city and command a lot of respect.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. AJ, calling from Northwest Washington. AJ, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was just telling her that when my mother was sick, the doctor told me to go make funeral arrangements.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost did that. My mother lived 5 years after the fact. And my girlfriend that had severe cancer just passed recently in the last few months, they had given up on her as well, and she lived better than 5 years after the fact. So, you know, there's only one that I believe that knows how long a person has to live. The doctors can help you get better sometimes, but only God knows when we're going to die.
Mm-hmm. So
I seriously don't agree with putting something in place for that.
Do you not agree with the option to have it, or are you saying that it is just not an option for you?
It definitely would not be an option for me, absolutely not, because I'm a very deep believer in the Bible, for one.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's like suicide, so no, I don't agree with it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it should be an option. I mean, that's given a person... you know, I realize that people have a right to decide what they want to do, and that's their right to do so, but I don't know. I just disagree with it. I can't explain it any better than that. I just don't agree.
Thank you, AJ. Mr. Chairman, did you want to respond to
what
you said?
Well, again, I think the fundamental issue here is whether one has the choice. And the caller's mother, my guess is the caller's mother would never want to make that choice. Okay, so... But I also didn't hear in that there was a doctor who was recommending that her mother take her life. That has to occur. There has to be, there are a number of safeguards, a number of steps to ensure that this is a person is of capable mind and that this is a considered decision, not an off-the-cuff or impulsive decision. And I think, you know, having seen my father and my mother before that, but hearing other council members in the debate today, there's a point at which it's clear it's not just somebody saying maybe you need to think about funeral arrangements. You know, the social worker who helped me with my father because it wasn't in Washington, she had a number of times told me that I should be looking at not funeral arrangements, but other arrangements like assisted living.
Or hospice care, perhaps,
yeah,
or the like.
That never happened, but it became clear in the last few months that hospice care, palliative care was clearly warranted. I mean, there's a point at which these things become more obvious. Not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not for everybody. Clearly not for everybody. I have to keep emphasizing that. And my understanding is that in the other states, it's really a very small number of people.
And let me make an observation based on what AJ was just suggesting. In the two examples, she spoke about the relatives of the people in question and not necessarily what the people in question were suggesting.
Correct.
And so certainly, you know, there is an argument to be made over this issue from both sides. So, AJ, thank you so much for your input. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. William, calling from Northwest Washington. Thanks for calling, William. What's on your mind?
Yes. I know the council member, and I wanted to ask him, are the council planning on making AMR, ambulance service, a permanent entity in D.C., and what is the plan for AMR?
He's talking about the supplemental
ambulance
service that was implemented earlier this year to help with ambulance response times.
Yeah, recall that the mayor and fire chief's response to problems with EMS was to contract with a third party, that's AMR, to help with basic life support transports. My sense of where council members are, the majority of council members, is they see this as a short-term solution and that they want the department to build the capability to in-house handle all transports. We don't want to keep contracting out that basic life support.
How would you handle that if you certainly, you know, had your druthers? Would that mean, you know, putting in, you know, more money, more hiring? How would that work?
Some of it has to do with deployment. Some of it, a lot of it has to do with the call volume. And when I say that, there are over 100,000, I think it might be at this point around 130,000, 150,000 calls a year. I know there's a big difference between 130 and 150, and I don't remember the exact number, but that's 150,000 calls a year to 911. Not all of them result in transports. My recollection is that somewhere around 85,000 result in transports. But there are a lot of calls that are really don't actually warrant 911 response. And we need to look at strategies that we do better at not dispatching 911 transports when it's not necessary.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with D.C. Council Chairman Phil Mendelson. Lines are still open, and we're still going to take as many phone calls as possible, so give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lynette, Shanika, Lawrence, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in just a moment on SiriusXM Channel 141.